Okay, so my talk is about sample path analysis of queues and the relationship between teletraffic multiplexing and just queuing theory per se, fundamental queuing theory. In fact, I started my PhD at McGill on queuing models of telecommunication networks. And then from there, because I learned something about sample path arguments, I went to fundamental queuing analysis and then back to teletraffic. So I want to talk a bit about those, about this work. And the first thing, which is what I started to work with, is what today we would call cell multiplexing, in those days, constant length packets. Multiplexing, not just one multiplexing, but a tree of multiplexing stations. And it was in 79, 1980, when in Montreal, Michael Kaplan and at Bell Labs, John Morrison, and then several, many others tried to do things. Michael Kaplan solved a two-tandem network in which the inputs here are Bach-Poisson. Here are Bach-Poisson, Bach primarily for John Morrison, and where he computed the joint, in fact, waiting time analysis of a packet here, or a cell, waiting at this station and that at the next station. I'm not exactly sure what was the motivation of Michael Kaplan, although I think that it was what then in my paper I wrote explicitly. It was there was the Kleinrock's modeling of the of a network in telecommunication, which he tried to solve, in fact, two nodes in tandem. And in telecommunication, the service time, it's the length is proportional to the length of the packet. So that doesn't change here and here. He was not able to do that. Incidentally, it was solved by Boxma several years later. And so he made this assumption that when the network is very complex, a lot of fan in, a lot of fan out, you start with Poisson, you get back to Poisson, and each queue basically you solve individually. The tree multiplexing networks with cells, constant length packets, it's the exact opposite. There's no fan out. It's clearly that the internal flows are not Poisson. In fact, the internal flows are, these are the on periods, what they call today. I think I called it in a paper, which is in 84 in Operation Research, active and passive periods. This is the on periods, the off periods. And here, during the on periods, you have cells one after the other. So how can you solve when you have several streams like that, and in particular, when you have one on-off and then batch Poisson arrivals, which is the case that Kaplan solved? Okay, so Kaplan asked me to solve the n-fold net, an arbitrary with an arbitrary number of stages, which John Morrison himself, Michael Kaplan, many other people tried, and this is what I did as the first thing. And incidentally, there's a 1993 paper which appeared with, instead of Bach-Poisson-Lévy, in Annals of Applied Probability, with gain. It is a two-stage network which is solved, and the arbitrary, the n-fold network, is said not to have a solution. Okay, and what, this is Michael Kaplan, the way he solved it is he did the following thing. You assume that every, the capacity of all those stations, links, is the same, and during an on period, the unfinished work coming in, the input increases it at least as fast as the capacity of the servers. And so during an on period, there is an increase in the unfinished work. And he said, pinch this to a point, those gradual arrivals will be just an instantaneous arrivals. They'll be separated by exponentially distributed intervals. You have an MG1Q again. Fine. Okay. It's a much more complicated to solve the whole thing, but this is not my thing. Okay. And then what happens is that today, of course, in fact, by the way, this type of on-off thing was first, in fact, was introduced by Mikhail Rubinovich in 73, J.W. Cohen in 74, Kosten in 75, where the Anik Mitra and Sondi thing came about 10 years later. The If you start with an on-off modeling in which during the on period things happen in a complicated way, but you assume that the unfinished work is non-decreasing, then again by this pinching sample path argument, you have an MG1Q during the off periods, and then you have to get inside, which is much more difficult. And generally to do it, you assume phase distribution and things like that. Fine. Okay, the next thing, after I did that, in 1983, so that's a paper, so that is a paper which appeared in Operations Research in 84. But in 1983, there was a paper in Operations Research by Scholl and Kleinrock, in which they were analyzing the MG1 with vacation or setup times, and they were saying there's a very simple decomposition. We don't have an explanation for it. And I think that Fuhrmann did it because of that article. I don't know why he did his decomposition using, for the MG1, using the statistical equivalence of the number in the system for first come, first serve, and last come, first serve, non-preemptive, because service times are ID. I did it at the same time in the spring of 1983 for using the last come first serve non-preemptive, and it's a pure sample path. You don't need a statistical equivalence, and it also goes for JJ1. So let me take 1 minute, and then I'll talk about the computing variance for estimation, which is the main subject of this talk. All right. So the I solved the. By the way, this is from my physics defense in 1984. Okay, I did the following thing for the decomposition. Let me see if you see. Okay, fine. I said this service here, this length here, is the time to the what is called the vacation time that the server takes, or the setup times. The vacation time, it's a very bad word, a very misnomer, because really it's a server never idles. A server can do a foreground work or do a background work. I mean, idle is a background work as well. So when you to explain whatever this sample path decomposition by which was asked by Kleinrock and Scholl, I said the following thing. Well, the unfinished work, the total unfinished work, which is foreground and background, does not change if I interrupt the background when a foreground task arrives. So I said the following thing. Well, I start here. I'm not sure if you can see that. I'm going to make it think simple. So I start. This is the foreground work, which I start setting the background work, vacation, background work. At this point, there's foreground work, which is coming. So I interrupt the background. I go for a whole service period, busy period of the foreground, continue the background. Again, there's an interruption. Go for the foreground interruption until I finish my background task. So now the unfinished, the waiting time for a foreground, it's very simple. Well, it's the unfinished work on arrival, and this unfinished work is decomposable in this way. Within this foreground busy period is TW foreground, the MG1, plus the remaining service time of the background task. That's the decomposition that Kleinrock asked a simple explanation. And then immediately I said, but why should this task be a background task? It could be a foreground task. So then I decompose the MG1 to itself. Okay? So I just have the classical MG1 queue, I say, well, the waiting time, if it's this particular task, which is the one initiating the busy period, well, it's zero. The probability is immediate. But if it's not the first one, it will be in one of those sub-busy periods. So within it's W, the MG1Q, plus the remaining service time of this initiating thing. Okay, so this is immediate. And it is obvious that the, well, this is U, and I mean that, which denotes the service time. You have that the W, it could be zero. You just need the mean number of these interruptions to, okay. You need the probability when it is zero, the probability when it's not zero. If it's not zero, it's the W itself plus an independent U. You add the remaining service time of the of this interrupted service time. Okay, so just to find the probability, it's very simple. You can iterate this decomposition. It's clearly a branching process, and this is just the mean number of the interruption. It's rho. In the second generation, it'd be rho squared. So everything is very simple. Fine. There's a hell of a lot more to this, because this is it is a branching process, not just a Galton-Watson, but it's a Berthet branching process. It's related to ladders, and today it's an absolutely central thing in probability, because it was generalized from compound Poisson to Lévy by Le Gall and Lejeune, and it's truly a central thing. Everybody knows about it. Very celebrated. This is published in 87, the GIGI one in probability in probability engineering and informational sciences. There's a page there on MG1 and GM1. There was another technical report which is rejected by Pace. Asmussen liked it very much. When he got it in 89, he quotes it in a couple of his papers in 91, 92. David Aldous, Jim Pittman, those things were well publicized in 89, 90. Okay, fine. I don't have time to talk about that. That's not the subject, the main subject of my talk. But let me just say one thing. This decomposition, you see, you have the busy period. Let me look at the whole thing. You have the busy period, and those sub-interruptions of the sub-busy periods, which reiterate. So when you compute the stationary distribution, what's the stationary distribution? It's the expected value of whatever statistics you compute within one busy period divided by the mean number of the tasks served in a busy period. Fine. That's the stationary distribution, the expected value of the statistic. But with this decomposition, when everything is IID, you can compute not just the expectation, but the variance, covariance, and anything, and the moment generating function of whatever statistics you have. Variance is important, because variance will tell you how fast, when you want to estimate something in a queue, you go to the stationary values. It will give you the variance around the expected value, the confidence interval. Okay, now of course, if you know the MG1, why do you want to compute the, how fast does it go to the expected value? Because those results can help you in knowing beforehand roughly how much time it will take you to estimate something in queues which are not MG1. And this is important, because you do estimation in all kinds of control admission, effective bandwidth, and things like that. Okay, so for estimation, so the purpose, I want to estimate, say, for the MG1 queue, where I can compute everything. I want to compute the variance of my estimators, for, in particular, for expected performance, and for when I compute the gradient of the expected performance with respect to changes in arrival rate or in the service rate, because this is what you want to do in practice for routing and for any other purposes. So I want to have some analytical formula which I will compute for the MG1Q, but which will be useful for a more general queue, like, for instance, for these on-off MGV things which are partially reducible to the MG1Q. I'd like to know roughly how long it will take me to be within plus minus 15% of the performance. Okay, so when I want to estimate, this is just a function. You could forget a function. I want to compute the mean waiting time, and well, I have to look at M cycles, M busy periods, so I add and I divide by the number of the tasks in those things, or I could be an indicator function, and then I compute, I can estimate some tail distribution. Okay, so I want to compute that, and I want to know how fast would this empirical mean go to the expectation. And for that, it's a standard formula, well-known, classical, that to compute the coefficient of variation of this empirical mean, I have to compute the coefficient of variation of the numerator, of the denominator, and the correlation between the two, because they're correlated. And this is also, and of course, they go with one over this. This is all the bias. I just don't want to clutter too much the thing. Same thing for the bias, and it goes 1 over m. So I have to compute analytically the variance of the statistics and its correlation with the number or whatever with this and the denominator. Okay. So you do it because you have this IID decomposition of the Turing process within one busy period. Now, when you want to estimate a gradient, it's a bit more complicated than just the expectation. Suppose you want to estimate, okay, so that was just the empirical mean to whatever expected. But if you want to compute the gradient, first of all, you gradient with respect to the arrival rate, gradient with respect to the service rate. So first of all, these are related, because it's just simple arithmetic. Double the inter-arrival time, and if you also double the service time, would be the same thing, except with a different unit. So, and you can play with the scaling of one of the time with the scaling of the service duration. So there's a simple formula. This is, by the way, a transient, but it's a simple formula for station distribution and for the gradient as well. So when I compute a gradient with respect to the arrival, it would be as good for the service rate and vice versa. Okay, when I say it's a bit trickier, because if you very naively, but of course nobody is that naive, you just to compute a, you take two IID realization, and at lambda and in lambda plus some delta, and you want to do the difference to estimate a derivative. Of course, you have to be, for a good approximation, you want to have this lambda and lambda plus delta as close as possible. Lambda goes to zero, but then variance goes up, so that's not good. And everybody knows that the two sample paths have to be very correlated. How much more? 3 minutes? Okay, so they're very correlated. So one way is to do the infinitesimal perturbation analysis. There are others. You can compute all those things, the variance of those estimators in this way. And just to show, papers are published on this, just to very quickly, the these are formulas which for the coefficient of variation, say for the expected value, and this is for the gradient, and this is for the MGRNQ. Everything is known. I put here, depends on the fourth moment. In fact, there's an explicit formula here. I just don't have time, don't have space to put it in here. And there is the low traffic and the heavy traffic. Explicit, very, very simple. And this gives you for any MG1Q. It could be Pareto for that matter. How much more? 1 minute? 2 minutes? How much? 2 minutes? Okay. And fine. Okay, and the last thing, not just the variance. So this will give you the what's the time to be within, as I say, plus minus 15% or whatever you want to be of a certain estimation. And also, just for simulation or for in real-time estimation, you like to know the batch sizes for the negligible correlation, right? If you want to estimate the interval of confidence, the batches, the correlation has to be 0.05 or something like that, or 0.1, and you can... here is just an approximation, but you compute exactly with the decomposition. And again, you have, so this IID decomposition of the MG1Q permits you not just to do the stationary distribution, but almost anything you want. I think I finished. I'm on time.